Cool, all right. Just scanning around. We're looking a little flat this morning, are we? That's the problem when they schedule these games in Australia, eh? We've got to stay up. Those who, the haves who watched it at 10 o'clock, and the have-nots like me, who toughed it out to 1:30 last night. And yesterday I had my son's 5th birthday party, which does sound like a significant event, but if you knew what birthday parties were like in my house, this is like, whew, the world stops. So this party can be the party to end all parties. So if I can stay awake for the next hour as I share this word, you can too. And I can see almost everyone except for the people behind the sound desk. All right. So the rugby's big in our whānau, but I tell you something that challenged the bigness of the rugby was the Olympics. Did anyone get into the Olympic Games? Put your hand up if you got into the Olympic Games. Put your hand up if you did not get into the Olympic Games. It is going to be a long morning for you guys. I got Olympic Games analogies just coming out my ears tonight. This morning. So, long morning. You might want to help out the kids program if you don't like the Olympics. Bring in Dave. He loves it. He can go do his job. All right. So, it really consumed us, the Olympic Games. And our kids, kids are just basically sponges for their parents anyway. So they just do what you do. So they would get up early, because it's murder getting out. Our kids are the kids that sleep right, they sleep in, you know, they don't get up early. It's weird, but they don't get up early. Yeah. And they get up really early so they can go watch the Olympics. It's great. So we get them ready for school and stuff like that, and then they can watch the Olympics. But anyway, they're totally absorbed by it, and Keely and Nathan. And it was like the first week of the Olympics, and me, Keita, and Nathan are watching them. It's about 3 a.m. And and Keita goes, "If you could go to the Olympics, what would you do?" He's asking me, "If you could go to the Olympics, what would you do?" It's a big if, Keita. Good question, though, eh? So how about you turn to the person next to you, and you tell them, "If you could go to the Olympics, what would you do?" Come on. Turn to the person next to you. What would you do? Okay, any synchronized swimmers? Here we go. Tell a lot about a person by if they want a synchronized swim. Rhythmic gymnastics. Wow. Jeez, I see that hand. 100 meter sprinters. Ben Claxton, eh? Yeah, the glory event. Lucky doesn't have enough already. Okay, my answer, tennis. Anyone else have tennis? I had it all worked out. I win the tennis, and then I've got like these majors and stuff during the year. I've got an income. It's not just glory, it's money, and I get to just spread it out for the whole year, year after year, right? It all worked out. Nathan and Keita, they both do swimming, and we take them down to the local rec there, and they do swimming lessons. And Catherine and Dave, their kids do it as well. And they were down there, and Catherine, as fate would have it, at the end of the Olympics, she asked Nathan, if you could go to the Olympics, what would you do? And Nathan replied, "I'd tell people about Jesus." So, does anyone else feel a little sheepish? Here I am, nutting out exactly how much glory I can squeeze out of this glory orange, this golden orange, and my son Nathan is using his moment to tell people about Jesus. So why is Nathan using his opportunity to tell people about Jesus and I'm not? This morning we're starting either a 2 or 3 week series on mission. I haven't worked out which one it is. Carol? We don't know. But there'll be at least one, maybe two, just depending how it goes, depending on how the crowd and tithes go. We might even stretch it out to 3 weeks on mission. And one could assume that mission is the greatest call that we could have on our lives. One could assume that. Mission, this kind of partnering with God to reveal his awesome purpose and his awesome plan to the world. to reveal it in word, sign, and deed. This is what basically being a follower of Jesus, being a Christian, is all about. And this kind of mission call is bigger than any other moment or call or prize we can have. Bigger than winning a gold medal at the Olympic Games. One could assume that. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with winning a gold medal at the Olympic Games. In fact, I think it's a great thing. I think more and more, we need more and more Christians to be pursuing these types of things. We need more Christian, successful and wealthy and prosperous businessmen and women. We need more of these people achieving great success in the world. But the thing is, it needs to just be the means to the end. You know, it can't be the end. It can't be, I won the gold medal, therefore I'm successful. It needs to be, I won the gold medal, therefore I can lead people to understand more about Jesus or God. Therefore, this is what life is about, and I am successful. It's not so much that we don't want to be successful tennis players, but it's about what the purpose of that is. So this morning, I just want to go around, and the thing is, I'm going to go on a limb, and I'm going to say, I'm probably not the only person who sometimes gets his or her, actually it's just his with me, his priorities mixed up. I would dare to suggest that most of us here at some point or sometime kind of get our priorities mixed up, and we're after more of the gold than we are about the mission. So this morning, I just want to sort of look at three things that Nathan reminded me. Before the Olympics, there was sort of me preparing myself for the Olympics, the pre-Olympics. And a part of that process was I watched the documentary on Channel 1 called The Golden Hour. Did anyone see that? The Golden Hour? Wow, TV1. So the Golden Hour, it told the story of the legendary coach Arthur Lydiard and his runners. Arthur Lydiard was this legendary coach, and he took basically four runners to the 1960 Olympics. And in particular, the documentary focused on the hour on the track where both Peter Snell and Murray Holberg won their gold medals. So we're going to watch a clip right now from that. And in this clip, we see Holberg lining up to race in the 1500-meter event, which is like the blue ribbon event of the time.
People were coming back down the tunnel, shaking the head.
Bill Moore, this is one you'll tell your grandchildren about, I'll assure you. You can say that again, Bill. That was a fantastic finish by Snell. It was unbelievable.
The surprise on those people and officials and athletes coming back down the tunnel, and they said, Snell. Snell. I just couldn't believe it. And as we burst into the arena, and the noise of the crowd, the occasion, the atmosphere was there. And unlike Melbourne, where the noise and the situation had been overwhelming and out of my control, I felt in control. Everything was focused. All I had to do was to put our operation into plan, which in its day was quite different. Three laps out from home, I should drop in a very fast lap, as fast as I could go, and then keep my lead to the finish. I have no doubt, even at that moment, I thought, this is not going to be easy. But for all the factors I had put myself through, the experience I had taken, I knew that this was my day, this was the day that I would not accept defeat.
Bronte.
So, is there any chance of getting light back on? So, he goes on to win the race, as we all kind of know. It's part of history. And to think that a country could have won the 1500-meter blue ribbon event to win two events in an hour on the track was just, it was as unthinkable back then as it is today. I mean, we were such an isolated country, away from all the best that athletics had to offer, all the best competitions, all the best training techniques. And New Zealand was on the edge of the world, and there's no way we could possibly pull off a feat like that, but we did. It was totally unthinkable. Here's the thing. Lydiard was a coach who thought the unthinkable. Lydiard was a coach who thought the unthinkable. He was, by all his peers and everyone who would reflect back on that time, Lydiard was a complete revolutionary. And his training techniques that he pioneered are still used. They're the basis of all training today. Now, here's the thing, though. The world has no shortage of people that think the unthinkable. We call them loonies. There's no shortage of them. What the difference here is that this revolutionary, this guy, he managed to gather together a tight group of runners that would follow him and listen to him. And we heard in the clip, Holberg's standing there going, all I knew, all I had to do was I had to put the plan into action. Lydiard had managed to bring together a group of men that would simply follow him. And the men really had nothing to assure them that what Lydiard had to offer was going to actually work. The only assurance they really had, because his ideas were so revolutionary and never been done before, commentators thought if you followed Lydiard's ideas, you would actually kill yourself. The human body can't take what he's going to ask you to do. It doesn't make sense. It defies belief. The only assurance that the runners had was that Lydiard had already done it to himself. Lydiard had used himself as a guinea pig. Lydiard would get up and he would run a marathon before breakfast. 42 k's before breakfast. And then he'd run another 23 at night. Everything that he asked the runners to do, he did himself. And the analogy here is so obvious for us. If the runners were Lydiard's disciples and they would follow Lydiard, surely we are disciples of Jesus and we should follow him with the same trust and the same fervor. And Jesus' instructions are clear. We hear it. We heard it in the reading this morning. He goes to his disciples and he says this, "As the Father has sent me, I'm sending you." In my Bible, it has all the words of Jesus in red letters. And I kind of think, like when I get asked to talk, I always think to myself, well, you know what? Like, here we have, you think of the Christian faith, it's just been around for forever. Well, it's been around 2,000 years, and before that we had the Jewish faith. It's been there. And all of this knowledge and all of these writings, these sacred writings, they're all piled into this tiny, small little book. That's it. This is all the wealth of Christianity in this book. And then in this book, believe it or not, it's not just the writings of men with great ideas about what God might be like. In this book, we have a record of God himself who comes down in the form of Jesus and he dwells amongst us. And God is actually talking to us and telling us what it's really all about. And these words of God in the flesh, Jesus, are captured in red. And here we have the red letters of Jesus saying this to us. As God sent me, I send you. And I stand up here and I think to myself, sure, that's a bit, should have placed that. People will get angry at that one. Just talking about how great that book is, and I throw it to the... And the thing that gets me is I've got to stand up here and convince you. And if you're not going to be convinced by the fact that Jesus said that, there's nothing I can say. So that's the end of the message. No. But it kind of like, you know, if you're not getting that, you're not going to get this. You might just get inspired for a moment, all going well, and then it'll disappear. But these are the words of Jesus. His red letters. I am involved in quite a bit of fundraising, and we send letters to people. For common practices, we send letters to people and we asked to give money. I used to work for Tear Fund, and we had a bunch of supporters. We'd write them letters, telling them about a situation, and often they'd send money back and support our work trying to alleviate suffering somewhere in the impoverished world. And there's a few tricks with those letters. I might get shot here if there's any other fundraisers in the room, but let me tell you one of them. One of them is the PS. You know, the bottom of the letter? There's always a PS. Because what happens is people will look at its front, they scan and they just kind of look at the first line or the first couple words of the first paragraph, and then bang, their eyes go down to the last thing, which is the PS. And your PS in the letter is one of the most important things of the letter. Probably the intro is the first most important, and the PS is it's what it's all about. The PS captures everything that the letter has in a short sentence. The next time you get one, have a look. The thing is, Jesus, he comes down, he dwells amongst the people, he spends 30 years on earth, he spends 3 years rolling around with his disciples, and then he leaves with a PS, and across the Gospels, across all his word, the PS is always the same. As I have been sent, I send you. Go out and make disciples of all nations. This is Jesus' PS. Time and time again, Jesus' PS is go out and do mission. Go out and change this world. Don't let it end here. The word mission comes from the word missio, which simply means sent. And Jesus is the missio Dei. He is the God, like no other God, that has been sent into this world. And in the same way he has been sent, he sends us. And Jesus was sent to lay down his life, take off his heavenly robes and his heavenly glory and his own, you know, ambition, all of those things he put aside, and he would lay down his life, literally, for the lost and the broken and the downtrodden, for losers like us. Jesus will give up his glorious life for a wretch like me. So Jesus not only tells us in his words, but he shows us. He is showing us. Jesus has run the miles. So my first question is obviously, if it's so abundantly clear, and mission isn't what we're chasing after, is something wrong? I mean, it's pretty clear. Is there something wrong? Is mission on the forefront of your mind as you live your life? And if it isn't, do you think something's wrong? Mission is about Jesus. The second thing I learned from Nathan is that mission is about love. So I want you to stop everything that you're doing right now and think about this world. Take a look out the window and think about this world. There's massive, massive problems. Emma was talking about a walk that we're going to do to raise money for a situation in Africa where people are literally dying because they don't have enough food. That doesn't quite seem right, does it? Especially if you saw the amount of food at my house at the party yesterday. I know from my previous job with Tearfun that there is just incredibly abhorrent conditions of children that are used in labor situations in the developing world because they're basically free and they're enslaved and they basically get their living costs covered and they will forever be working in factories to pay off debt that wasn't theirs. I now work for an agency that looks at youth issues in New Zealand, and one of the stats that we have is that, do you know that 1 in 3 boys in New Zealand, 1 in 3 will appear before the courts before they turn 25. That's all the boys. 1 in 3 boys will appear before the courts before they turn 25. I was reading the other day in Christchurch. In Christchurch, they had what they had noticed was the divorce rates in Christchurch had begun to decrease and decrease and decrease. And this earthquake that's happened in the last couple of years and the constant kind of trauma that they're going through, now they're getting 5 divorces filed a day. I watched a documentary the other day on TV, a non-documentary, sorry, a Campbell Alive piece, you can hardly call that a documentary. And they were interviewing people in Manurewa as they were going in and out of the pokie machine places. And these people would go in for an hour and a half and they'd come out and they'd go, you know, how long were you in there for? They'd go, oh, 10 minutes. And how much did you spend? Oh, $10. And their lives are just being drained down a machine. Now the thing is, I'm not having a go at these people. It's just simply this, that this world is like really broken and beaten up and battered. It's in a terrible, terrible state. There are so many people that are hurting, that need help, need some sort of stimulus in their life, some sort of hope, some sort of peace, some sort of joy that is beyond them. That's exactly what this world needs. People are physically, economically, spiritually, and socially malnourished. And Jesus came into this world to set people free from those kind of prisons. Do you get that? The prisons of unhealth that we may be enduring, the prisons of addictions, the prisons of broken relationship. These situations that we find ourselves in that are so that affect us so much and make our lives so poor. Jesus came into this world to set people free from those things, to set people free from broken relationship with Him. That's why He was here, and that's why He sends us, to see things right, to see His kingdom come here on earth. Mick talked the other week about the E word, evangelism, and he said, you know, like one of the reasons why we might not do it is because we don't want to come across as a loony. And the thing is, we got to get that out of our head. I mean, you just got to get it out of your head that being a Christian is a crazy thing. It is a little crazy, but you're not. This is, we have the answers to so many of the world's problems. We have these things that everyone's looking at, these things of peace and hope and joy and comfort. And it is a good thing for us to be going into this world and helping the world through their problems. This is not a bad thing. I think sometimes we can get caught and think, well, who am I to tell them that they're going to hell? Or who am I to tell them that they are wrong and I am right and to disrespect them? This is something that is a good thing. And if you can just get a piece about, if you can just understand that you actually have the medicine for their illness, you will realize that you're actually, this is a great thing. We can just be calm about it. We can be patient about it. We can be assured about it. We can be steadfast about it. This is a great thing. This is a thing called love. That is mission. Mission is love. And if we see the brokenness of the world, then we must act out of love to do something about it. Mick also told the story of that that guy in Sydney. Do you remember that story? In Sydney handing out the tracts. Anyone remember that story? And you know how the story goes, we've heard it a million times. So he's handing out the tracts and we find out that it all turns out good and the guy was really great. Is that a good idea to go to hand out tracts in South Mall? I have no idea. No idea. It could be a stupid idea. It could be a great idea. I have no idea. You would have seen in the news recently the story of Bryce Jourdain. And this is the story where we had those kids from Spotswood College and they were climbing on the rock. You guys see this? And in one moment, the kids, for some reason, had been unsecured from their harness, were standing on a flat, and a freak wave came in and washed the kids out. And this guy, Bryce Jourdain, he just dives into this ocean because he wants to rescue these kids. And Bryce is lost at sea, presumed drowned like the other two boys. Now, was that a good thing to do? Was that the right thing to do for Bryce to jump into that ocean? Really? I don't know. I have no idea. But that's what love does. Do you get that? Love just jumps in. Love just sees people in need. They see a problem. They see some sort of urgency about it. And because they love so much, they want to make a difference. So love just rolls up its sleeve and it jumps right in. And that's what mission is. Mission is us just rolling up our sleeves and jumping right in. It's a good thing. I was thinking about Nathan. Sorry, he'd hate me. I hate it if he knew I called him Nathan in front of you guys. I was thinking about Nathan, and he, and I don't know if you're going to dislike me because of this, but Nathan doesn't even know that hell exists. He doesn't even know at this point. I mean, he's 5 years old. I haven't got around to trying to unpack that with him. Some good news and some bad news, Nathan. So I don't know, I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. He doesn't even know hell exists. But here, his fervor for telling the word about Jesus exceeds mine, and apparently I know all about it. You see, the thing is, it's love. Nathan just thinks Jesus is amazing. He thinks Jesus gives his life so much more meaning and purpose. He gives our family stability and hope and founding and all those great things. And he just thinks that everybody should have the opportunity to hear about this Jesus. It's love. And that's got to be the basis of mission. We've got to do it out of love. We've got to see the need. We've got to roll up our sleeves, and we just got to jump in. We don't need to unpack it anymore. So my second question is, are your sleeves rolled up? The third thing I can learn from Nathan is that mission is great. So my next question for you guys, turn to your neighbor and tell them, what makes the Olympics so great? What makes the Olympics so great? Turn to your neighbor, you tell them what you think it is that makes the Olympics so great. Okay, alrighty. So, I ran a couple focus groups, and I kind of asked them what they thought made the Olympics so great, and inevitably everyone agreed with me, as you tend to do, and most people thought this: what makes the Olympics so great? Yes, there's sacrifice. Yes, there's human endeavor. Yes, there's all those stories. But really, what makes the Olympic Games so great is the fact that it is for the whole world. Did anyone come up with that? Wouldn't expect this side, but Matt, you're obviously a leader amongst your peers. Well done. This side, of course, you guys all thought that, agreed. Thank you. Amen. What makes the Olympics so great is it's for the whole world. It makes it, I mean, who the heck gets up and watches the Commonwealth Games through the night? It's better than the European Championship, better than the Pan American Games. The Olympics are so great, it's because it's for the whole world. Everybody's there. This year, at the Olympics, there were only two countries not represented by an athlete. Out of all the countries in the world, only two weren't represented. Any ideas? Vatican State, yep, Vatican City. And the other one was Kosovo. I knew you guys would ask me that later, so I'll tell you now, so I don't have to talk to you afterwards. There was a story of the first female athlete from Saudi Arabia. Remember that story? The judoka? First woman ever from Saudi Arabia. We had the story of the blade runner. The things that make the Olympics great is because it's for the whole world. And whenever the whole world hasn't turned up to Olympics, there's always been a bit of, you know, kind of, it wasn't really Olympic Games. The only medal count to rival this one for the Kiwis was the, was it 84 Olympics? Where we won 8 gold medals. But it doesn't really count because there were like the whole Soviet bloc wasn't there. It was like 14 countries not represented, so it doesn't really count. Even like, you know, with the Rugby World Cup last year, you know why I really wanted to win that? It's because they've never really won the Rugby World Cup. We've only ever won the Rugby World Cup takeaway South Africa World Cup. But now we can say we truly won it because the whole world was there. And that's what makes God's mission so great. God's mission is for the whole world. It's for the whole world. And here's the real kicker, here's the real beauty. There's no qualifying standards. Anyone can join. It's for everyone and anyone. There's no selection, there's no making any criteria, there's no great standard we have to reach. Everyone is invited to take part in God's gospel, his mission to the world. That's how great mission is. It's so great, it is for everyone. No one should miss out in God's mission. And I think for us, it's so easy to get tunneled vision about God's mission. It's easy for me as a dad to think my life is all about my family. My family is really, really important, but God's mission is for the whole world. It's not just for my family. it's easy for us as a church to look into Manurewa and go, we're so desperately in need. Why should we be going overseas when we've got all these troubles in our own backyard? Surely we should sort them out first before we look over there. But God's mission is bigger than that. It is for the whole world. It's easy for us to get focused in on morality and think that God's mission is all about living this righteous life that would honor God. But God's mission is not about goodness and good people. God's mission is for the dirtbags like us. It's for the whole world. And we can't get tunnel vision and focus on one or two of these things because God's mission and God's gospel is so much bigger than all those things. Jesus tells us this: the good news will be preached throughout the whole world so that all the nations will hear about it, and then finally the end will come. He says this good news, this is what's going to happen. My good news is going to get preached to all the nations in the world. And once all the nations in the world have heard it, then I'm going to come back and things are going to be set right. This is what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for my gospel to go to all the nations in the world. Now, of course, he said this 2,000 years ago, all the nations have changed, chopped and changed. He's not talking about boundaries on a map. He's talking about people and people groups. And his gospel needs to go out to all the different people groups that we see and know. And that's what mission is about. It's about getting his gospel, his good news, out to all of these people. Do you get that? That's all that Jesus is waiting for. Like, it must be fairly important, am I right? If that's all he's waiting for. If he's just waiting for this moment when everyone's heard about it, then I would say that that is probably the only thing that matters. And that's the only thing that our life should be about, fulfilling his mission, getting his gospel to all people. See, he's not waiting for New Zealand to win 20 golds in Olympic Games. And he's going, we've made it. That's it. No point waiting any longer. This is as good as it gets. I'm coming back. New Zealand's won 20 golds. He's not waiting for the perfect church service. Man, the music, you guys nailed it this week. Glenn, you were on fire. Look, let's roll it up. Game over. This is as good as it gets. We've reached perfection. He's not waiting for your new house with the extra bedroom that you needed. He's not waiting for you to get that promotion that you know you'll get and you'll finally be happy. He's not, well, Glenn's made it, CEO. Time to go back, fellas. He didn't even come down and wrap it all up when we finally won the World Cup. You see, nothing else matters to Jesus. All of this is just a means, it's just incidental. It's in the miscellaneous line on his balance sheet. Is that right? Is there such a thing? P&L? Yeah, sundry line, and there's P&L. Two people in the room got that. So here's the question for you. If it came down to you, how long would God be waiting? I mean, if he's waiting for his mission to go out to all the world and all the people, and it's you, how long is Jesus going to be waiting before he gets to come back? Because he's dying to sort out this mess. And he's waiting for you to get this incredible, life-changing gospel to the ends of the earth. How long are you going to leave him waiting if it comes down to you? All right, we've got one more clip from the Golden Hour because you're dying to see the end of that race. But there was a moment in that documentary, and it was a moment where they were interviewing all of Lydiard's runners, and there was a guy named Bill Bailey. And Bill Bailey was one of Lydiard's runners, and Bill Bailey was actually an excellent runner, and for all intents and purposes, he had followed the plan, he had trained, he had done all the things that a runner should do. But he never got selected for the 1960 Olympics, and he never got to run in the race. And they're showing this documentary. Obviously, 1960 was 50 years ago, and they're interviewing this guy 50 years after the event, and they said to him, what does it feel like to have missed out on the Olympics? And he starts choking up. He can't get it out how the disappointment it was for him not to be able to actually compete in the event. Because it wasn't about the training. It wasn't about hanging out with the other disciples. It wasn't about all of the nutrition and all of the things that go into it. What it was actually about was running the race. And I think to myself, what happens if we get to the end and we've actually missed the point of what it was all really about? We went to church, we paid our tithes, we prayed the prayers, we had good morality, but we never actually got to do what it was all about. Can we show that last clip for us, please?
It was certainly a sight to see because I'd never seen an athlete who ran with what I would consider a handicap. I'd never seen that. And so your first thought was, well, you know, he's here, but what can he do? He only has one arm, one useful arm.
The plan was to run a fast lap about three out and hang on.
And Halberg starts to make a move as they come down towards the straight here this time. Halberg starts to move up on the outside. He's moving up now into third place. And there's Halberg going out on top and he's going away with a terrific burst.
Murray, having worked his way quietly up, goes bing, bing, bang, gone. He fires in the sprint and he's gone.
He's opened up with a gap of 5, 7, 10 yards over Grodowski of Germany. Albert comes out of the back straight, round the curve. He's got 15 yards ahead of Grodowski of Germany now. Grodowski is just flying low, but Albert looks over his shoulder. Albert looks over his shoulder as he comes into the straight. And Halberg is getting a terrific cheer from this great crowd here. There must be 90,000 here today in this huge stadium, and Halberg is getting a terrific ovation.
I must admit that it was grueling, to say the least. I was all right after the fast lap, but to hang on for another two laps was hard going.
It's a pretty courageous tactic to do because it can backfire. And the question was Murray going to be able to hang on? And they did respond. The German Grodowski was certainly closing. So that was pretty tense.
They were cutting me back, cutting me down. And I guess in the last 300, my mindset was simply, you're destined to win here. Don't falter. Don't fail. And the last 100 metres was simply a matter of saying to myself, just let me stay upright. Just let me stay on my feet and moving forward. And when you get there, you can lie down.
What has happened here? Something very special has occurred. And the most amazing thing to me was he's laid out on the infield, bam, and there's this withered arm just lying there. He was now Olympic champion.
And Halberg wins by about 10 yards from Grodowski of Germany. As he crosses the line, he just steps onto the green verge and then stretches out.
I'd appeal to the Olympic gods. Just let me win. I looked up at the scoreboard, and it was not an elevation to a different sphere at all, but a very human moment.
I almost felt as though we owned the stadium. It was impressive.
To share an hour in the Olympic arena like that, and both to win, how could you not feel as if you were more than just brothers in arms? You were joined at the hip.
Everybody suddenly wanted to know all about Peter Snell, Murray Helberg. And who's this chap? Idiot. Where'd he come? Arthur had proved to the world that he actually did know what he was talking about.
Cool. How magic is that moment? But here's the thing. Nothing is going to compare to that moment when we step out of this world and into the next one. All of this stuff is going to just fade away. And there's just going to be this moment where we meet with God, our Creator. And you may be feeling unable as you go through this life. There may be things that you think are holding you back and too hard to overcome. You may be feeling really tired and exhausted. You may even be questioning the instructions of your coach and your master. But let me tell you this, you're destined to win. You're destined to win this race. All you need to do is to stay upright and finish. And one day the whole world, every nation, every tongue, it's going to know that Jesus was right. This revolutionary, he was right. And at the end of my life, I can think of nothing better than to fall exhausted and withered into the arms of my Savior as I have finished the race. Lord, we thank you that you not only send us, Lord, but God, you sent your Son Jesus into this world. God, we are not alone. This is not just an idea. This is not just a technique. This is your plan for this world and our lives. Lord, I pray that you'd remind us of the glory of your mission for this world. Lord, you'd lay on our hearts how broken and battered things are. And Lord, you'd inspire us with how glorious things can be and will be. Lord, I pray that each of us would know that we have a special place in your plan for this world. And Lord, you would kindly remind us and encourage us and challenge us and warm us into that mission. In your glorious name we pray. Amen. So we're going to finish now. Frank was going to finish this, close the service, but he rung in sick this morning. So what we have here is, like I said, we're starting a couple of weeks of mission. And what we do here is we get these kind of stuff from the mission group in the Baptist mission group, Transcend, or whatever they're called now, Transcend. And the idea is basically that you've got these canisters, and in here you can put money, and money that is raised through you putting stuff into here will go towards supporting mission in our world. It's just an opportunity. It's just an opportunity to make mission happen in this world. So we're going to invite the guys up, and they're going to play a closing song. I don't know. We're trying to remember what it's called when you play a song while people are leaving. Anyone know that word? The proper word for it. Recessional, that's the one. That's what I said, but the boys laughed at me. They said it's called the final song. All looks, eh? But here's your invitation. Here's your challenge this morning. Is mission isn't as hard as you think it is, and it's not as hard as you make it. This is your opportunity to bring mission into this world. And as they play, you have the opportunity to come up, just grab a canister, and then just leave. Just go, as the Bible has told us to do. Amen.